I have long maintained that William Shakespeare could not have written the great roles that he wrote without great actors to bring them to life. And I wish we knew more about Shakespeare's actors than we do. Thankfully, my friend, novelist Nicole Galland, has just written her new historical novel called Boy, which imagines the life and career of one of Shakespeare's boy actors, Alexander Cook, at a pivotal, transformative moment in his life. And Nicole, how much of this is true, and how much is your imagination? And if it's the latter, I'm now going to think that it's all true anyway.
Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 951, Nicole Galland's Boy. It's fantastic to be talking again to friend of the pod, Nicole Galland, whose page-turning new historical novel, Boy, is a story of young love, political intrigue, and cross-dressing both on stage and off in Shakespeare's London. Nicole's talked on the podcast before about her previous novels, I, Iago, The Rise and Fall of Dodo, and Master of the Revels, and it's always thrilling to talk to her about how she's able to tell the great stories she tells.
We know a little bit about the boys in Shakespeare's Theatre Company, not a whole lot, not nearly as much as we do about the actors themselves. Sander Cooke was a real person. We don't know what his exact dates are, but he was around then. He came along slightly later than I have him, which means that, so in this novel, Shakespeare's very deliberately writing all the comic heroines for him, and probably the actual historical Sander Cooke got the tragic ones written for him.
Oh, interesting.
There probably was some boy very, very close to him in age for whom the comedic ones was written, because there was, first of all, we always think of Shakespeare as having lived forever, but so much of the writing happened in a relatively short period of time. If you compare it to like Tolstoy's writing career, and the apprentice boys were there for a 9-year period.
The thing that's so great about, I mean, there's so many elements of it that are great, but now I'm just focusing on the sort of the backstage stuff. The idea that Shakespeare would have seen the actors he has, seen their qualities, seen their abilities, and written to exploit them.
Exactly. And I think that one of the dangers of just teaching Shakespeare's literature is that you lose track of that.
Yeah.
That it was a sort of an interdependency in what he wrote and who he was writing for. And because there's so little known about the boy players, except one or two who went on to eventually become company members in the Chamberlain's Men or the King's Men, and one of them even became a shareholder, but only one out of all of them.
Yeah.
Tully. So because we don't know very much about them, we sort of have to almost reverse engineer who they might have been based on the qualities that you can find in multiple female characters that were all written at about the same time.
Right.
So that's sort of where that's the construction of Sander, in a sense. That's how
I'm struck by the fact that in 2019, we wrote the comedy of Hamlet, a prequel, one of the surprises of which was how much the character of Ophelia became a co-lead. And in your book about one of Shakespeare's boy actors, there is a female equal co-lead of Joan Buckler. And they've grown up together. There is a crush that might turn out to be more than that between the two of them. I don't want to give anything away. There is cross-dressing both on stage and off, and in ways that I should have seen coming, knowing Shakespeare as well as I do. Was that conscious on your part, creating this character of Joan, or was that one of your reasons to write the novel?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I have to answer it sort of indirectly. I thought in the very, very early stages of both Sander and Joan's existence, I didn't realize that they belonged in the same book. Joan started to come into her own independent of gender presentation, in that I was wondering how a young person, an unschooled young person that didn't have access to natural philosophers, who we now call scientists, like, what do you do with that? If you've got that interest and that curiosity and you've got no easy access to the people that can help you, where does it go? Mm-hmm. And in particular, where does it go if you're female in a mm-hmm. world like that? So I thought that Joan was going to be the character in a book of her own. And then meanwhile, there was Sander sort of seducing me, as Sander does with everyone. Suddenly, I had this eureka moment. I remember exactly where I was standing when I suddenly thought, wait a minute, these two belong together. And then they almost immediately, I'm going to sound slightly psychotic or something when I say this, it was as if the three of us had a three-way conversation about what needed to happen next.
There's nothing better than a literary three-way.
That's what Sander says.
Yeah. Well, and that sort of you touch on there this element of, well, this idea of what can Joan do to get into the rooms where women are not allowed. Well, obviously that's going to lead to dressing up as a man. And that has both comic potential, and it's also fraught with very real danger 400 years ago. And I think you walk that line really well. We first met because you were the literary manager at the Berklee Repertory Theater back in the last century. Why do you write novels and not plays?
I get asked that a lot, actually, because I was like in the theater world for so many years. And then instead of shifting as a writer to plays, I went straight to novels. I have too much respect for actors and theater artists, and I am terrified that I would end up giving actors material that they would feel stuck with on stage. It's horrible from my days as an actor. It is just horrible where you get a job and you're playing a role because you have to, because that's how you earn your living, and the role hasn't really been thought out very well. I didn't want to disappoint any of my actor friends by writing mediocre roles. Whereas if you're writing a book and there's some character who's kind of like a side thought, it doesn't matter if that person's not completely well fleshed out. So I think that as a struggling actor myself, I was projecting. So I know that's not very articulate, but I didn't want to let anybody down who is an actor by giving them material that wasn't absolutely brilliant. And there's more wiggle room for that in a novel. I just said that several times in a row because I hope that that last version is something you can just cut out and use instead of all my blah, 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 blahing.
No, the blah, blah, blahing is great. And that's very articulate and very generous. I'm going to call bullshit on it a little bit because you write great dialogue. You write fantastic characters. I want to play Francis Bacon in the stage version or the film version of Boy. Just putting that out there.
I'll let my agent know.
Would you? That'd be lovely.
But the other reason, actually, which was only occurring to me as I was trying to articulate that one, the other reason is I write psychologically complicated characters, and a lot of what goes on with them is internal, and whatever happens on a stage is behavioral. So I noticed that I'm currently, if I can, you can cut this if it's going too far astray, I'm working on a one-woman show right now that is about somebody who is in a place where they can't talk for 3 days and they're stuck with their own mind, their own thoughts in their head. It feels like a counterbalance to the play Small Mouth Sounds, which is also about a group of people stuck in a place where they can't, I think they're on a meditation retreat and they can't talk for several days. But that one is more intrinsically theatrical because they are, even without the words, they're interactive. It's all about the behavior that makes it work theatrically. Whereas mine, the humor and the intensity is purely verbal, but it's, taking all of the thoughts that are in this very busy character's brain and putting them out into the world. And you can't do that in normal theater. You can't have so much of what's going on in my characters' worlds are subtextual and almost more cinematic than theatrical, I think. But I don't know why. I have questioned that about myself as well. My dream job would be to be a playwright. And I know that I have all of the requisite skill sets and I'm familiar with everything that's needed. And my writing career began because I won an award for writing a screenplay. So literally the only angle I haven't done is playwriting. I'm even adopted Shakespeare, but there's just some sort of mental block against it. I don't think I'm good enough for what I consider to be the ultimate literary art.
That's a good answer too.
Hello there. This is Gary Andrews, also known as Gary Scribbler on the social media, author and illustrator of Finding Joy and illustrator of Daisy the Littlest Zombie, written by some young upstart. And you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, you lucky people.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In 2 weeks, we return to Merrimack Repertory Theatre in Lowell, Massachusetts for the 3-week regional theatre premiere of The Comedy of Hamlet, a prequel. In fact, MRT is offering a discount to podcast listeners. If you call the box office or order tickets online, just mention or type in the discount code REDUCED50 for $50 tickets in the best seats in the house. Go to MRT.org and use the discount code REDUCED50 for $50 tickets. Then this April and May, we'll bring back our newly updated version of All the Great Books Abridged, performing it in Bristol, Tennessee, Harrison, Virginia, Louisville, Kentucky, Elyria, Ohio, Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, and Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Check out the touring page at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. And now, back to my conversation with novelist Nicole Galland. The other thing I loved about not just the novel Boy, but literally the title Boy, is yes, it's a noun, but it's also a verb. Maybe this is a too deep of a cut, but I mean, doesn't Shakespeare...
I love it. Keep going.
Well, Shakespeare literally has Cleopatra say, "Some squeaking something will buoy my greatness on stage," predicting her own celebrity and her own dramatization on stage. It's a very meta moment, Shakespeare wrote.
One of the great meta theatrical moments of maybe the first one.
I don't even know if there's a question there, just me just showing off.
I'm really impressed, Austin. Thank you for showing off.
Yay. But again, not only do we get this idea in your novel that Shakespeare wrote Viola, say, or Rosalind for Sander Cooke, that the meaning of one of his other tragic roles, and I don't want to give too much away, but the meaning of the role of Richard II changes depending on the actor playing the king. And that is such a wonderful insight about the value and variety and contributions of actors.
Yeah. I love actors. They're my people.
Well, and again, it takes me back to why I'm surprised that you don't write plays, because you write, I think you could, for sure, 100%. I don't think there's going to be an actor alive who's going, "Oh, well, this is not psychologically rich enough."
it's sort of like the last frontier for me. I am terrified of not doing it well enough. It's the one thing that, you know, like, I love all of my books, but there are ones that I think are stronger than others, but I'm okay with the fact that maybe this one is not as strong as that one. Yeah. I still love this one and I forgive it for not being as strong as that one. I don't think that I could do that with a play. I think that unless the play was literally every single syllable that an actor, that a real live human had to utter, was exactly magnificent, I couldn't give myself for not living up to this impossible standard that I have about it. Whereas there's more wiggle room with books. I don't know why. It's completely irrational, but it's definitely there. So maybe someday, Austin, I will write a play and it'll be Shakespeare themed, because what isn't? and we That's can a- about that then. We can celebrate. And
that is such a good point. What isn't Shakespeare themed? The other thing I loved about the book is that I know that in some of the early, I don't know, promotional materials or something, it was touting it as a very queer story, which it is, but in the sense that it explores very matter-of-factly the spectrum of both gender and sexuality. And it doesn't, it's not exploiting it for titillating reasons. It's genuinely exploring what it's like for young people. I mean, and this applies to old people too, realizing, hang on, I'm different now than I was. I'm different than this other person. I like different people now. I mean, that whole journey, like maybe implied by the title, from boy to man, from boy to something else. What was that conscious on your part that you wanted to portray sexuality 400 years ago so matter-of-factly, or was that grounded in your research, or was that heterosexual author timidity?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. I'm not going to acknowledge timidity, obviously. No, I think the first option is actually the homosexuality was not a casual thing there for men. It wasn't a casual thing for women either, but because that was less threatening. It's so interesting that this, I'm going to go off, sorry, slightly off topic for a moment, but it's fascinating to me that these issues came to a head at a time when there was a woman on the throne. So many of these issues. Now, obviously, it's not as if everything changed when Elizabeth became queen, and nor did it instantly change when James then followed her as king, although I think things were rougher for women once James was king. But in general, at that time, we have so much evidence, particularly of bisexuality and homosexuality in men. We have much less for women because we have much less of everything for women, because women weren't worth documenting in the same way.
Right.
Unless something utterly dastardly. So we know that there was a lot of that sort of coded into the culture. And Sander, now I have to sound like a flaky writer. Sander just wanted to be bisexual. It just felt very natural and easy to him to be bisexual. And so I let him, because that's what he wanted.
Well, and the character is embracing who he is.
Right.
And what's lovely about that is that his vision of who he is changes dramatically for both personal and professional reasons. And that's one of the tensions and one of the great engines of the story. Let me ask this other question, which I really maybe should have even started with, which is, you're an historical novelist. How do you walk so confidently and describe so compellingly what the streets were like? I mean, you describe Elizabethan London in ways that sound as if you just were walking down the street taking a video on your phone of it. You're literally describing the video you took when you were back there. How do you do that? There are so many details in every paragraph that I go, well, each one of those would have taken me a week of research. How do you have that all at your fingertips?
Need a week of research. I mean, that's part of it. Is I am a nerd. I am a geek. I love to research. There's so much material available, both very, very sort of erudite, abstract, scholarly, but also things like Ian Morris's Time Traveler's Guide to Elizabethan England. It's not enough to rely on its own, but my gosh, he gives you so many good starting places to go to. And then I also had the great fortune that Gary Andrews, who is a Shakespeare fan and a friend of both of ours, agreed to meet with me and walk me around London. I mapped out, there's a scene, which I had to trim it down a lot because otherwise it was going to sound like a travel log, but there's a scene about three quarters of the way through, where for reasons we won't get into because it would be spoilers, one of the characters has to walk a big circle around London to get back to Southwark safely. And Gary joined me and we figured out what the route would be and talked about various things and as we went around with it. So that was timed how long it took to walk on a bridge over the Thames, that sort of thing.
Well, and that was another delight for me. I didn't know that Gary had done that with you. But that's another delightful part of the book, is that you have an actor from 400 years ago leaving Southwark, which was the center of theatrical London then, and taking this roundabout route that takes him through the center of theatrical London now, down Shaftesbury Avenue, through Soho, down Charing Cross Lane. It's spectacular. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Comedy Podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Nicole Gallen's lovely new novel, Boy, goes on sale tomorrow, February 25th, 2025. Send us your historical speculations via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to former Boy actor and Juliet Matthew Croak. Web services by Ginger Power Limited. Music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Dr. Lisa Templin. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to artist and director Gary Andrews, who, in addition to giving walking tours of London, illustrated my children's book, Daisy the Littlest Zombie. Find him on the socials at Gary Scribbler and garyscribbler.co.uk. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 951 2853rds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
When you are walking on a street, even though the street looks absolutely nothing like it did at the time, the tiniest little things like, we are moving slightly uphill. Mm. Now we are moving slightly downhill. This street is very, very wide and the buildings on both sides of it are very, very old, which means it has always been a wide street. Why would that be? Mm. And street that also has very old buildings, but it's very narrow. Why would that be? That kind of thinking, it's a little bit like a crossword puzzle. Making sure that everything fits together. And
Well, I love it. Taking the known facts of anything and filling in the blanks with your own amazing imagination. It's fed. I mean, I don't know if anybody else is going to like this. It might be that Boy was written explicitly for me, but I thought it was fantastic.
I'm honored that you feel that way about it. Oh, wait, before we go, I just want to give a shout out to my young friend, Sam, a non-binary Shakespeare geek, who was so helpful in helping me think through the difference between what it means, what gender means now versus what gender means then. We had a great conversation. And there's a passage in the book that every time I read it, I think of them because they inspired it.
That's amazing. Oh, well, thanks, Sam, for me as well, because that comes through on the page loud and clear in a beautiful way.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.